And I apologized to your parents. I told them something came up and I had to run. Did something come up? I don't want to interject myself into your family time. Your mom mentioned you hadn't seen each other in a few months. Work's been crazy ever since Mr. Wren died. Bennett held his hands up. I get it. Trust me. My mother would tell you I don't call or see her nearly enough. You don't have to leave. It's okay. I can admit defeat on the rare occasion that it happens. You won this battle, but you won't win the war, Texas. I'll let you present your ideas to them undistracted by me. I stood. My mother is going to be so disappointed. She was probably planning on discussing what kind of underwear you wear over dinner to make sure you're not killing off sperm with tighty-whities for the protection of her future grandchildren. Bennett took another sip of wine and offered me the now half-empty glass. But when I went to take it, he didn't let go. Instead, he leaned in close while our fingertips touched. Tell Mom not to worry. My boys are healthy. He winked at me and let go of the wine. I prefer commando. I chuckled and watched him walk to his car. He loaded his presentation supplies into the trunk and slammed it shut. Hey, I yelled. He looked up. Do you ever sketch yourself? Commando could be a good superhero name. Bennett circled to his car door. He opened it and held it onto the top as he yelled back. You'll be dreaming about it tonight, Texas, and I don't have to guess what part you'll exaggerate.
Chapter 6. You're late. I looked at my watch. It's 3 minutes after 12. The 405 had a backup. Fanny wagged her crooked, arthritis-stricken finger at me. Don't be bringing him back late just because you couldn't get here on time. I bit my tongue, holding back what I really wanted to say in favor of, yes, ma'am. She squinted at me, seeming unsure whether my response was patronizing or if I was really being respectful. The latter was impossible since you need to have respect for a person in order to show them some. We stood on the porch of her little house, staring at each other. I looked around her into the window, but the blinds were drawn. Is he ready? She held out her hand, palm up. I should have realized that was the holdup. Digging into my jeans pocket, I pulled out the check, the same payoff I'd given her every first Saturday of the month for 8 years, so she'd let me spend time with my godson. She scrutinized it as if I was going to try to rip her off, then tucked it into her bra. My eyes burned from accidentally seeing some wrinkled cleavage as I watched. She stepped aside. He's in his room, punished all morning for having a foul mouth. Better not be getting that language from you. Yeah, that's probably where he gets it. It's the 5 hours every other week I get to spend with him that screws him up. Not your drunk-ass fourth or fifth, I've lost count, redneck husband who yells, shut your fucking pie hole, at least twice during my 5-minute pickup and drop-off. Lucas's eyes lit up when I opened the door to his room. He jumped from his bed. Bennett, you came! Of course I came. I wouldn't miss our visit, you know that. Grandma said you might not want to spend time with me because I'm rotten. That made my blood boil. She had no right to use my visits as a scare tactic. I sat down on his bed so we were eye to eye. First, you're not rotten. Second, I will never stop visiting you. Not for any reason. He looked down. Lucas? I waited until his eyes made their way back to mine. Not ever. Okay, buddy? He nodded his mop-top head, but I wasn't so sure he believed me. Come on, why don't we get out of here? We have a big day planned. That brightened Lucas's eyes. Hang on, I need to do something. He reached under his pillow, grabbed a few books, and walked over to his backpack. I figured he was putting away his school stuff until I got a good look at the cover of the top book in his hands. My brows drew together. What is that book? Lucas held it up. They're my mom's journals. Grandma found them in the attic and gave them to me after she read them. A memory of Sophie sitting on the curb writing in that thing flashed in my head. I'd forgotten all about those journals. Let me see that. The first book was a leather-bound journal with an embossed gold flower on the front, which had mostly faded away. I smiled as I flipped through the pages and shook my head. Your mother wrote in this thing on the first of every month, never on the second, and always in red pen. She starts the page with, Dear Me, like she doesn't know she's writing the letters to herself. and she ends them with these weird poems. They're called haiku. They don't even rhyme. I laughed, thinking back to the first time Soph showed me one. I told her I was better with limericks. What was the one I'd recited? Oh, wait. There once was a man named Lass. He had two giant balls made of brass. And in stormy weather, they clung right together, and lightning shot out of his ass. Yeah, that was it. She told me to stick to drawing. Once, in high school, she'd fallen asleep when we were hanging out, and I got my hands on this one and read it. She was pissed when she woke up and caught me almost done with it. I looked over at Lucas. Your grandmother knows you're reading this? He frowned. She said to learn everything about my mom and then do the opposite. Said it would help me get to know who you are better, too. Fucking Fanny. What was she up to? I'm not sure it's such a good idea for you to be reading these right now. Maybe when you're a little older. He shrugged. I just started. She talks about you a lot. You taught her how to stop throwing like a girl. I smiled. Yeah, we were close. I couldn't remember the specifics of the parts I'd read a long time ago, but I was reasonably certain it wasn't something an 11-year-old should be reading about his dead mother. What do you say I hang on to these for you for a while and maybe pick out some parts for you to read? I don't think you'll want to read your mom talking about boys and stuff, and that's what girls usually write in journals. Lucas scrunched up his face. Keep 'em. It was kind of boring anyway. Thanks, buddy. Are we going fishing today? He asked. Did you make us new lures? He ran to his bed and crawled under until only his feet were sticking out. His smile was ear to ear when he came back out with the wooden box I'd given him and opened it. I made a woolly bugger, a bunny leech, and a gold-ribbed hare's ear. I had no clue what the hell any of them looked like, but I knew if I Googled them, his lures would be made to perfection. Lucas was obsessed with everything fly fishing. About a year ago, he'd started watching some reality TV show about it, and his enthusiasm hadn't dimmed, which meant I'd had to figure out how to fly fish. Once I'd been watching a YouTube video about lakes in Northern California to fly fish in, and when I'd mentioned I was thinking of taking him up for the day, he started to recite all the best spots to fish for different things around the lake. Apparently, he'd watched the same video I'd stumbled upon, only about 100 times. I took the lures from the box and checked out his handiwork. They looked no different than the ones you'd buy in the store. Wow, good job. I held up one. I called dibs on using the woolly bugger first. Lucas chuckled. Okay, but that one's the bunny leech. I knew that.
Sure you did.
So how's school going, buddy? We're getting close to summer break.
School's okay, he frowned. But I don't want to go to Minnetonka.
My body turned rigid. I knew Lucas's dad lived there, but I didn't think anyone else knew that. Why would you go to Minnetonka?
Grandma's making me go to her sister's. She lives in the middle of nowhere. I've seen pictures. And when she comes to see us, all she does is sit on the couch and watch dumb soap operas and ask me to rub her feet.
He paused.
She's got onions.
Onions?
Yeah, on her feet. They're like weird bumps that are all bony and stuff, and she wants me to rub them. It's gross.
I chuckled. Oh, bunions. Yeah, they can be pretty gnarly. How long are you guys staying?
Grandma said a whole month. Her sister's having...
Lucas held his fingers up to make air quotes.
Lady parts surgery.
His delivery would have made me laugh if we'd been discussing anything other than him leaving for a month and going to a place his mother never had any intention of taking him.
She said I'm going to meet a whole bunch of family, but I'd rather stay home and go to soccer camp.
What the hell was Fanny up to now? The two of us definitely needed to have a talk when I dropped Lucas off this afternoon. She hadn't mentioned anything to me about missing any visits, and I'd already paid for the summer-long soccer camp it seemed he would miss. But I'd learned better than to promise Lucas I could make his grandmother see what was best for him, so I attempted to put the topic on the back burner for later and not let it ruin our Saturday. How are things going with Lulu? Girls were a new topic of discussion lately. Lucas cast his line out into the lake, and we watched it plunk down into the water at least 60 feet away. I'd be lucky to reach half that. He locked the drag and looked my way.
She likes Billy Anderson. He's on the football team.
Ah, now it makes sense. 2 weeks ago, when I came to pick him up, He'd asked me if I could talk to his grandmother about him trying out for the football team. She told him it was too dangerous of a sport. He'd never expressed an interest in anything but soccer before, and God knows I tried to get him to throw a baseball and football around. But he was almost 12 now, about the age I was when I discovered 12-year-old Sherry Patton would jump up and down and cheer for me if I scored a touchdown. Damn, that girl had great pom-poms. Oh, yeah? Well, don't worry. There are plenty of fish in the sea. Yeah, he moped. I think I'm gonna like an ugly one next time. I held back my laughter. An ugly one? All the pretty ones are so bossy and mean, but the ugly ones are usually pretty cool. Maybe he should be advising me on girls instead of the other way around. That sounds like a good plan, but let me give you one piece of advice.
What?
Don't tell the girl you decided to like her because she wasn't one of the pretty ones.
Yeah, I won't.
He reeled in his line with a smirk on his face.
I bet the girl wearing your shirt when you changed her tire a few weeks ago was really, really mean.
I laughed. The kid didn't miss a thing. Normally, I didn't bring women around Lucas. Not that I didn't think he wouldn't be cool with it, but because the relationships I had didn't generally last too long. Except a few weeks ago when he'd met Elena, the hot little meter maid who took care of more than one fantasy I'd had about a girl in uniform. We'd spent the night before my regular every other Saturday visit with Lucas at my place. 10 minutes after I'd picked him up, she called my cell to say her car needed a jump outside of my building, where I'd left her still in my bed. I couldn't very well not go back and take care of her car when she'd taken such good care of me. So Lucas met Elena. I'd said she was a friend, but apparently he'd put two and two together. The little shit. Elena was very nice. Until I didn't call the entire next week. Then she told me to fuck off, and suddenly yesterday I started getting parking tickets when I parked in my usual spot outside the office.
My friend Jack says you should ask a girl 3 questions, and if she answers no to any of them, you shouldn't like her.
Oh yeah? What questions are those? Lucas counted off on his fingers, holding up his thumb for 1.
First, you ask if she's ever let anyone copy her homework.
He raised his pointer finger.
Second, you ask if she can eat more than 1 slice of pizza. And third, he added his middle finger, you need to know if she's ever gone out in her pajamas.
Interesting. I scratched at my chin. I might have to test this theory myself. Does Lulu eat more than 1 slice of pizza?
She eats salad.
He said it like the word was a curse. But there was something to that. When I take a woman to a nice Italian restaurant or steakhouse and she orders a salad, half the time not finishing it because she's too full, that's never a good sign. Let me ask you something. How did your friend Jack come up with this test?
He's got an older brother who's 18. He also told him that if you tell a girl you have 3 testicles, she'll always let you show her your wiener.
That one, I'd most definitely be trying out. I wondered if it would work on Little Miss Daddy Owns a Winery. I don't think you should try out that last piece of advice. Could get you arrested for indecent exposure. Lucas and I spent our entire day fly fishing. He caught a bucket full of trout. I caught a tan. When I drove him back to Fanny's house, she was her usual friendly self. I had to stick my foot in the door to keep her from slamming it shut in my face after Lucas and I said goodbye. I need to speak to you a minute. Both hands flew to her hips.
Is your check not going to clear?
God forbid that happen. My check is fine, as was the one that I gave to Kickstart, the day camp I paid for Lucas to go to this summer. Fanny was a pain in the ass, but she was sharp. She didn't need anything explained to her.
Have to help out my sister. He'll get to go for half of it.
And what about my Saturday visits? She ignored my question.
You know, he's been asking a lot of questions about his mother this week. I found some old journals of Sophia's. They make for some pretty interesting reading.
He's too young to read his mother's journals.
That's the problem with young people today. Parents protect them too much. Reality isn't always perfect. The sooner they learn that, the better.
There's a difference between giving a kid a dose of reality and scarring him for life.
I guess we're lucky it's up to me to determine what will scar him and what won't then.
Yeah, right. What about my weekends?
You can keep them until 6 instead of 5 when we get back.
It'll make up the lost hours. Unbelievable. I promised him I'd see him every other Saturday. I don't want to let him down. She flashed a vicious smile.
Think that ship's already sailed?
My jaw flexed. We had an agreement.
Maybe it's time we renegotiate that agreement. My electricity's gone up because of the new phone and computer you bought him.
You get your check right on time every month, and I pay for plenty of extras like camp, school supplies, and whatever else he needs. You want him to go to that camp so badly? You keep him for the month I'll be taking care of my sister. I work late and travel all the time. Not to mention my job was at stake, and I'd be working even more the upcoming months. Fanny stepped back from the doorway into the house.
Looks like you'll be breaking your promise come next month then, won't you? Just like you did to his mother. Some things never change.
She slammed the door in my face.
Chapter 7 August 1st. Dear me, today we made a friend. It didn't start out like we were going to be friends, though. I was practicing throwing a softball at the pitchback the old owners left in front of our new house, and a boy stopped on his bicycle to watch me. He said I threw like a girl. I said thank you, even though I knew he didn't say it to be nice. Bennett got off his bike and let it fall to the ground, not bothering to use his kickstand. It looked like he did that a lot because the bike is pretty scuffed up. Anyway, he walked over and took the ball out of my hand and showed me how to hold it so I wouldn't throw like a girl anymore. We spent the rest of the afternoon playing together. And guess what? Bennett and me have the same teacher when school starts next week. Oh, and he doesn't like to be called Ben. After we were done playing ball, I was going to show him around the new house, but Mom's new boyfriend Arnie was home. He works at night, so I'm not supposed to make noise during the day because he sleeps. So we went to Bennett's house, and his mom made us cookies. Bennett showed me a notebook of stuff he made. He draws really good pictures of superheroes. Guess what else? I told him about the poetry I write, and he didn't laugh. So today, my poem is dedicated to him. The summer is rain. A little girl sings outside. She drowns in music. This letter will self-destruct in 10 minutes. Anonymously, Sophie.
Chapter 8 Something was off. Not one insult or smart-ass comment since I walked into his office 20 minutes ago. I'd typed up our list of the accounts we'd each agreed to keep, and which we were pushing off to staff. But I realized a few we were reassigning had upcoming meetings already scheduled, and we should probably attend those to smooth out the transition. I rattled off the clients and dates, while Bennett sat behind his desk, continuously tossing a tennis ball in the air and catching it.
Yeah, that's fine, he said.
What about the Morgan Food campaign? We didn't talk about that one because the request for proposal hadn't come in yet. It arrived this morning.
You can take it.
My brows drew down. Not going to question that one aloud. I crossed that off my list and kept going. I think we should have a staff meeting, a joint one. Show both our teams that we can act as one, even if it's just an act for their benefit. It'll boost morale.
Okay.
I crossed another item off, then set my pad and pen down and watched him more closely. And the Arlo Dairy campaign. I thought maybe you could do some of those exaggerated body part superhero sketches to include with our presentation.
Bennett tossed that damn ball up into the air, then caught it. Again.
That's fine. I knew he hadn't been paying attention. Maybe you could sketch the VP of operations. I bet she'd look great with a bigger rack.
Bennett tossed the ball up and his head swung in my direction. His glazed-over eyes seemed to come back into focus, like he just woke up from a nap and for the first time saw me sitting there. The ball fell to the ground.
What did you just say?
Where are you? I've been sitting here for 20 minutes and you've been so agreeable I thought you might have the flu or something.
He shook his head and blinked a few times.
Sorry. I just have a lot on my mind.
Turning his chair to face me, he picked up a tall coffee from his desk.
What were you saying?
Just now or the whole time? He stared at me blankly. I huffed but started over. The second time around, when he actually paid attention, my adversary wasn't as agreeable. Yet he still seemed off. When we were done going through my list, I thought he might need some cheering up. My parents really liked you.
Especially your mom, he winked.
Now that comment seemed more like the Bennett I'd come to know over the last week. Must be early onset senility. Anyway, they showed me your proposal for their ad campaign. It was really good.
Of course it was.
For a second, I reconsidered what I'd spent days mulling over. His blazing ego didn't need any more fanning. But my parents deserved the best advertising campaign possible, and that wasn't mine, unfortunately. As much as it pains me to say it, your ideas were better. We'd like to go forward on the radio copy and magazine sketches you proposed. I have a few tweaks, and I'd obviously like to stay on the campaign as the point person, but we can manage this campaign together. And I'll let Jonas know it's my family, and give you credit for bringing in the better pitch. Bennett stared at me for a long moment, saying nothing. Then he leaned back into his chair, steepled his fingers, and squinted at me like I was suspect.
Why would you do that? What's the catch?
Do what? Tell Jonas? He shook his head.
All of it. We're in the middle of fighting for our jobs, and you're going to hand me a W that's an easy point for you.
Because it's the right thing to do. Your advertising is better for the client.
Because it's your family?
I wasn't quite sure about the answer to that. The fact that it was my parents' winery was a no-brainer. But what would I do if this were a regular client we had both pitched? I honestly don't know if I'd be handing him anything. I'd like to think my morals would have me putting the client first, no matter what. Yet this was my job on the line. Well, yes. The fact that it's my parents made it an easy decision to put the client first. Bennett scratched his chin.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. I opened my to-do list notebook again. Now, next order of business. Jonas sent us an email this morning on the Venus Vodka campaign. He wants ideas by this Friday, and he doesn't want us to tell him who came up with which pitch. I think he wants to make sure we have direction early, because he doesn't trust we'll be able to work together well enough.
Would you do that for any client?
Be ready early when the boss asks? Of course. He shook his head.
No. Use my campaign if you thought it was better than yours.
Apparently, I was the only one who'd changed subjects. I closed my book and leaned back in my seat. I'm honestly not sure. I like to think I would put any client first, that I'd act ethically in their best interest. But I love my job, and I've invested 7 years working my way up with Ren. So, I'm ashamed to say, I can't really answer that with certainty. Bennett's face had been stoic, but a slow grin spread across it now.
We might get along after all.
What would you do in that situation? Do what's best for the client or for yourself?
Easy. I'd bury your ass, and the client would get second best. Although, on the off chance my work was actually second best, it would be by a hair, so the client wouldn't be suffering much.
I laughed. Such a damn cocky bastard. But at least he was honest. Good to know what I'm up against. We spent the next half hour going through open issues, and then decided we would get started on the Venus campaign later in the day, because we both had afternoons jam-packed with meetings. I have an appointment with a client at 2. I can probably be back at the office by about 5, I said.
I'll order us in some dinner. What are you? A vegetarian, vegan, pescatarian, vegan?
I stood. Why do I have to be any of those? Bennett shrugged.
You just seem like the type.
Too bad eye rolls weren't a form of exercise. God knows I'd be in tip-top shape after being around this man. I eat anything. I'm not picky. I'd made it to the door when Bennett stopped me.
Hey, Texas.
What? I needed to stop answering to that name.
Have you ever let anyone copy your homework?
My nose wrinkled.
Homework? Yeah, at school, back in the day. Could have been in grammar school, high school, or even college.
Madison might not have done a single math assignment on her own for most of algebra.
Of course I did. Why do you ask? No reason.
My appointment went longer than I'd anticipated, and the office was almost emptied out by the time I got back. Marina, Bennett's assistant, or rather our assistant, was just packing up her desk.
Hey, sorry I'm late. Did you let Bennett know I got delayed?
She nodded as she pulled her purse from the drawer.
Are you ordering dinner? Because my lean cuisines are clearly marked with my name in the freezer in the employee kitchen.
Yeah. Bennett said he was going to order dinner for us. She frowned.
I also have 2 cans of ginger ale, 4 Sargento cheddar cheese sticks, and a half-used squeezable Smucker's grape jelly in there.
Okay. Well, I wasn't planning on helping myself to someone's food in the refrigerator, but that's good to know.
There are menus in the top right-hand drawer.
Okay, thank you. Is Bennett in his office?
He went for a run. Normally he runs in the morning, but he went out about 45 minutes ago since I told him you were going to be late.
Marina glanced around the room, then leaned in closer and lowered her voice.
Between us girls, you might want to watch your supplies around him.
Supplies?
Paperclips, notepads, staplers. Some people around here have sticky fingers, if you know what I mean.
I'll remember that. Thanks for the heads up, Marina.
20 minutes later, Bennett popped his head into my office. His hair was wet and slicked back, and he'd changed into a t-shirt and jeans. He held a pizza box in one hand.
You ready?
Did you pay for that pizza or swipe it from Marina? He dropped his head.
She got to you already.
I grinned. She did. But I'm curious to hear the backstory from you.
Well, unless you like cold pizza, that'll have to wait, because explaining how nuts that woman is might take a while.
I laughed. Okay, where do you want to work?
I nodded to the box sitting on the guest chair on the other side of my desk.
I packed some stuff to prepare just in case you wanted to go elsewhere.
He walked toward my desk. Of course you did. Want to know what I did to prepare?
What?
I picked up 2 shot glasses at the little touristy shop down the block, just in case we feel the need to test drive the product.
Bennett plopped the pizza box on top of my box and lifted from the bottom. He tilted his head toward the door.
Come on, let's spread out in the bullpen. I think everyone else is gone for the day.
The Foster Burnett marketing bullpen was very different than the one we'd had at Wren. Aside from it being twice the size, which made sense, since Foster Burnett had twice the employees of Wren, it was set up like a dream college dorm lounge. Both bullpens had 2 couches and a coffee table, but that's where the similarities ended. Wren had framed inspirational quotes, easels holding whiteboards, a large drafting table for sketching ideas, and a small fridge with soft drinks. Foster Burnett had 1 long wall painted black that doubled as an enormous chalkboard, a foosball table, a full-sized Ms. Pac-Man arcade game, colorful beanbag chairs, dozens of origami animals hanging from the ceiling, and 2 well-stocked 1950s vending machines for soda and snacks in which everything cost only 25 cents.
This room is nothing like the one we had at the old office.
Bennett leaned forward and tore a 2nd slice of pizza from the pie, sliding it onto his paper plate. He held the box open.
You ready for another one?
No, thanks, not yet. He nodded and folded his pizza in half.
What was Wren's bullpen like?
Less dorm room decor and more corporate team building.
Framed picture of a pack of wolves with some bullshit teamwork slogan?
We didn't have that particular one, but I knew the print he was referring to.
Exactly. I set up this room when we moved up to this floor. Tried to get them to put a few showers in, but HR wouldn't go for it. Showers? I do my best thinking in the shower.
Huh. I feel like my best epiphanies come in the shower, too. I've always wondered why that is.
It takes away all outside stimuli and allows our mind to switch into daydreaming mode by relaxing the prefrontal cortex of the brain. It's known as DMN, default mode network. When the brain is in DMN, we use different regions of it, literally opening up our minds.
He shoved a 1/4 of his slice into his mouth, seeming not to notice the surprise on my face.
Wow, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew why we sometimes need to get out of the office or play a video game to free up our headspace, but I'd never heard the scientific explanation behind it.
I flipped open the pizza box and took out another slice. Lifting it into my mouth, I looked up and found Bennett watching me intently. What? I wiped at my cheek with the napkin in my other hand. Do I have sauce on my face or something?
Just surprised you eat more than one slice of pizza.
I narrowed my eyes. Are you saying I shouldn't eat more than one? He held up his hands.
Not at all. That wasn't a weight comment.
Then what did it mean? Bennett shook his head.
Nothing. Just something a friend of mine said about girls who actually eat.
I grew up eating a bowl of pasta as a side dish. I can eat. I caught Bennett's eyes doing a quick sweep over my body, as if a comment was about to come. But then he shoved more pizza into his mouth. So what's the deal with Marina? I asked. She rattled off a detailed inventory of the food she has in the fridge to let me know she'll be very aware if anything goes missing. Bennett slumped into the couch.
I accidentally ate her lunch 2 years ago.
You thought her lunch was yours and ate it by mistake?
No, I knew it wasn't mine. I don't bring lunch. But I was working really late one night and thought it was Fred's in accounting, so I ate it. It was one goddamned peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and now I'm accused of stealing her stapler or something every other week.
Well, I hear the rate of recidivism for first-time lunch thieves is pretty high.
I made the mistake of telling Jim Falcon. Now every once in a while, he swipes something off her desk and plants it on mine. He thinks it's funny, but I'm pretty sure she's about 3 paper clips away from poisoning my coffee.
Something tells me she isn't the only woman to feel that way about you. Once we put the pizza away, the two of us couldn't agree on anything. First, we took turns sharing our loose ideas for the Venus Vodka campaign. The company had solicited a full branding pitch for their latest flavored vodka product. We needed to come up with a cohesive package, proposed product names, logo ideas, taglines, and an overall marketing strategy. Not surprisingly, my ideas and Bennett's were a mile apart. All of my suggestions had a feminine ring. All of Bennett's were masculine.
Men ages 18 to 40 drink the most alcohol, he said.
Yes, but this is flavored vodka, honey flavored. The primary drinkers of flavored alcohol are women.
That doesn't mean we have to paint the bottle pink and sell it with a straw inside.
I wasn't suggesting that. But Buzz isn't a girly name.
It is when you add a bumblebee on the label. If the branding is too feminine, men aren't going to pick the bottle up to carry to the register.
Are you serious? You're really suggesting that if something is too feminine, men aren't going to pick it up?
I'm not suggesting it. It's a fact.
We'd been arguing for the last half hour. If we were going to get anywhere working together, we needed to spend less time trying to sell the other one and more time coming up with ideas. I sighed. What a shame. I really loved Buzz Vodka with a B on the label.
I think we need a system. Of course you do, Bennett mumbled. I scowled.
We each get 3 vetoes. If one of us invokes veto power, that means we think the concept is wholly unworkable, and there is no point in trying to shape it into a campaign. If one of us vetoes, we have to immediately move on and not try to debate why it's a good idea. I looked at my watch. It's 7:45 already. We could spend all night arguing.
Fine. If it gets you to give up on your B campaign, let's do it.
Bennett looked down at his watch.
And it's 7:51, not 7:45.
Yep, another eye roll. Bennett decided to play some Ms. Pac-Man to try to clear his head. I needed to relax a little to get into brainstorming mode, too, so I slipped off my heels and stood. Pacing helped me think. I shook out my hands as I walked. Honey vodka, honey flavor, sweet, sugar, candy. I began to run through word associations aloud. Syrup, hive, bzz, bzz, fuzzy, yellow.
What the hell are you doing?
The sound of his Pac-Man being gobbled punctuated his sentence. I stopped, trying to clear my mind and start thinking fresh. Bennett shook his head.
Your yapping is doing the opposite of clearing mine. I've got a better idea for you.
What, run home and shower? He reached into the box he'd carried in for me and took out the sealed, unlabeled bottle that Venus had sent over with the RFP. Then he dug 2 little shot glasses out of his pocket. I thought he was kidding earlier when he said he bought them in preparation for our brainstorming session.
We need to sample the product. Nothing like a little alcohol to clear your mind.
Chapter 9. Annalise O'Neill was a lightweight. We'd only done 2 shots, for research purposes, of course, and already her demeanor had changed. She waved her pointer finger in the air. The only thing missing was a light bulb and a bubble above her head.
I got it. Miso honey.
She pronounced the honey so it sounded like horny, then proceeded to crack herself up. I liked drunk Annalise. That's actually a damn good idea.
Isn't it?
Except it's already taken.
No.
Yep. There's a pale ale named Miso Honey. It's actually pretty good.
You've tasted it?
Of course. How could I pass a beer with that name and not bring it to my buddies? Who hasn't brought a bottle of Ménage à Trois wine to a party for the same reason? Annalise kicked her bare feet up on the coffee table.
Me? I've never bought it.
Well, that's because you're uptight. Her eyes went wide.
I am not uptight.
So you've had a ménage à trois, then? It was fun screwing with her.
No, but that doesn't make me uptight.
I leaned forward and poured 2 more shots of vodka. Annalise hesitated, but I nudged. One more. It'll help clear your mind. She'd made a face after the first 2 shots, but this one went down smooth. Yep, Annalise was definitely a damn lightweight. She slammed the empty shot glass down on the table a little too hard.
Ménage à blah. I was dumped once for not wanting to swing.
My brows jumped. Totally not what I expected to come out of her mouth. Your boyfriend wanted you to sleep with another guy?
Yep, in my first year of college. And of course, he'd get to sleep with another woman.
I sucked back my shot. That never appealed to me. I'm not big on sharing a woman. Annalise snort laughed.
Maybe you should date me. That'll make you want to sleep with other women.
I let that comment sink in a minute before responding. Did she just tell me she sucks in bed? Come again? She cackled so hard she tipped over on the couch. I had no idea what the fuck she was laughing about, but I started to laugh too. Watching her loosen up and be amused at her own comments was pretty damn funny. When her tipsy giggle fit subsided, she let out a wistful sigh.
Men suck. No offense.
I shrugged. Men do suck, especially me. None taken.
Sorry, I think the shots went to my head.
She sat up straight and smoothed out her hair.
Let's get back to brainstorming. My brain took a detour, apparently.
Oh, no, you don't. You can't just drop that dating you makes men sleep with other women and move on. I'm a man, remember? I suck. I can't move on from that without an explanation. Are you bad in bed or something? Annalise forced a smile, but it was a pretty damn sad one.
No, at least I don't think so. I've been told I'm good at...
She looked down and then back up under those thick lashes.
Certain things. I just meant because I got dumped for declining swapping once, and now my boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, Andrew and I, were on a break.
That answer had a lot of information in it, but I couldn't get past certain things. Was she flexible? Give great head. I once knew a woman who did this amazing thing with my balls. I swallowed. Fuck. You're right. We should get back to work. Excuse me for a minute. I abruptly got up and went to the bathroom to splash water on my face. A few minutes later, I'd managed to wrangle my thoughts away from what talents Annalise might have. Returning to the bullpen, I took a seat across from her. How about wild honey? Men and women both respond to the word wild. We can mark it by some association with the name. Wild parties, wild adventures, wild animals. Annalise seemed to ponder my suggestion for a while. At least that's what I'd assumed she was doing until she spoke.
You're a guy. What does on a break really mean to you?
Shit. Do I answer that honestly or tell her what she wants to hear? Vito. Her forehead wrinkled.
What?
You said we each have 3 vetoes, and when one of us hates something the other comes up with, all we have to do is say veto and we move on. No debating the idea. I'm invoking my 1st veto power. I'm not touching that question.
Come on. I really want to know. I've only gotten a woman's perspective, and you don't strike me as the type of guy to bullshit me.
I studied her carefully. She'd been giggling a few minutes ago, but she also seemed to be sincere and wanting an answer, so I took a deep breath. Okay. To me, being on a break means I want to have my cake and eat it too. I don't want to commit to just one woman, but I also don't want her to commit to anyone else, in case the day comes when I decide I'm ready to settle down, so I keep her on the hook while I go fishing somewhere else for a while. She frowned.
Andrew said he needed to discover who he is on Valentine's Day. I got dumped on Valentine's Day.
What a dick. How long were you together?
8 years, since junior year in college.
She'd probably hate me for it, but someone had to tell her the truth. So he's what, 28, 30?
29. He was a year ahead of me.
He's jerking you around. Her jaw dropped.
You don't even know him.
Don't need to. No stand-up 29-year-old man who loves a woman is going to set her free because he needs to find himself, especially on fucking Valentine's Day. She straightened her spine.
And you know this because you're such a stand-up guy.
Didn't say that. In fact, I'm the opposite of a stand-up guy. Never even had a girlfriend on Valentine's Day. I make sure I get rid of them beforehand so there's no expectation of candlelight and romance. That's why I can say with certainty that your ex doesn't really need a break to find himself, because it takes an asshole to know an asshole. Annalise's blue eyes blazed, her lips pursed, and her cheeks flushed with anger. If I'd been uncertain I was the asshole I'd just admitted to being before, the fact that seeing her getting pissed off made my dick twitch would have proved it. She stared at me for a solid 2 minutes and then got up to stand at the foosball table.
Let's go, she said. I feel the need to kick your ass.
It was hours later before we made any real progress, but once we started, we got on a roll, and the two of us really started gelling. I'd say one thing. She'd take it and run for a while. That would spark an idea in me, and in the last half hour, we'd come up with a name, sketched out a rough idea for a logo, and jotted down a dozen complimenting ad concepts. Annalise yawned. I took a look at my watch. It's almost midnight. What do you say we call it a night? We have a good start. I can work on the logo tomorrow morning and get something drawn up on the Mac. Maybe we can toss around some more ideas Wednesday so we can nail down which ones we want to present to Jonas. She leaned down and slipped on her heels.
That sounds good. I'm wiped out. And I think I may be starting to get a hangover from those shots earlier, if that's even possible.
Bent over like that, her blouse gaped, and I had a clear view right down her shirt. The gentlemanly thing to do would have been to turn away. But you already know I'm an asshole. Plus, she had a black lacy bra on. Black lace against pale skin is my kryptonite. Something about the contrast let my imagination run wild with a cook-in-the-kitchen, whore-in-the-bedroom fantasy. Which had me thinking, I bet she'd look great in a chef's hat and stilettos. I definitely needed to get laid. Not a good idea to be fantasizing about someone at work, no less a woman I planned to annihilate. The news of the merger might have deflated my perpetual hard-on, but apparently Miss O'Neill had pulled me through that dry spell. It wasn't the first time my dick had perked up around her. I diverted my eyes in the nick of time, a half second before she looked up at me. Her smile was genuine.
We did good tonight. I'll admit, I wasn't so sure we could work together.
I'm easy to work with. She rolled her eyes, a common response to my shtick, I'd noticed. But this time, it was more playful than real. We packed up what we'd brought into the bullpen, and Annalise wrapped the leftover pizza in some tinfoil she found in a drawer.
Can I borrow the Sharpie you were using to sketch before? I want to label these.
I reached into my pocket and handed it to her. In big, bold letters, she wrote across the front of the silver foil, "Not Marina's." She's going to think I did that. She smirked.
I know. I agreed you were easy to work with. I didn't say you weren't an asshole. I saw you looking down my shirt before.
I stilled, unsure how to react to her comment, and closed my eyes. The sound of her heels clicking on the floor told me when it was safe to open them. A few steps from the door, she spoke without stopping or turning around. but I could tell from her voice she was amused. Good night, Bennett, and stop watching my ass.
Chapter 10.
I hadn't been to the gym in more than 3 months. Andrew was a creature of habit and went daily at 6 a.m. sharp. I'd tried to join him at least 3 days a week when we were together, even though I preferred to exercise in the evening. But after our break started, it became awkward to see him there. We'd wave and say hello. Once or twice we even chatted, but the goodbye at the end of our conversation made my heart ache all over again. I'd stopped going for my sanity. Until today. I had no idea what possessed me to pick today, of all days, to go back to the gym, especially since it had been nearly 1 a.m. by the time I got home from work last night. But I arrived at 5:50, wanting to be already on the treadmill by the time Andrew walked in, if he walked in. We hadn't seen each other in more than 2 months, since the wedding of a mutual friend from college, and it had been almost 3 weeks since we'd even exchanged texts. Picking a treadmill in the corner, one with a straight view to the locker room exit as well as the front door, I popped in my earbuds and hit shuffle on Pandora on my iPhone. The first 5 minutes were rough. Maybe avoiding exercise altogether hadn't been that good of an idea after all. I huffed and puffed like a 2-pack-a-day smoker until eventually my adrenaline kicked in, and I found my groove with the pace I'd set. Although finding my groove didn't stop me from staring at the doors like I was waiting for Ryan Reynolds to walk through at any second. At 6:10, I felt my shoulders start to relax. Andrew was never late. Unlike me, he was a stickler for time. He must not be coming today. For all I knew, he could be away or had even changed gyms. Although the latter wasn't too likely, Andrew didn't do change. He ate the same whole wheat toast with 2 spoonfuls of organic peanut butter at 5:15 every morning and walked into the door at the gym at 6. By 7, he sat in front of the computer at his desk to start his daily writing. With the anxiety of anticipating his arrival dissipating, I upped my speed to 6 miles an hour and made the mental decision to not stop until I'd run a full 3 miles. It was probably better that he didn't show up and find me, since I was feeling so out of sorts lately anyway. After I hit the 3-mile marker, I did a 10-minute cool-down walk and then wiped off the machine. I hadn't brought clothes to shower, but I needed to pick up my purse from the locker and stop in the ladies' room before heading home to get ready for work. I'd made it halfway to the locker room when the front door opened and 2 people walked in, Andrew being the 2nd person. My heart raced faster than it had on the treadmill. And that was before the woman who'd walked in right before him turned to laugh at whatever he'd just said. They'd come together. I stopped in place about 2 seconds before Andrew looked up and saw me. I must have looked like a deer in the headlights about to get creamed by a Mack truck. He said something I couldn't hear to the woman he'd walked in with, and she looked up at me, frowned, and headed toward the elliptical machines. Andrew took a few hesitant steps toward me. "Hey, how are you? I didn't expect to see you here."
"Obviously." I nodded and swallowed back the taste of salt in my throat.
"You're late." "I changed up my routine. Writing later in the day. Even at night sometimes."
I forced a fake smile.
"That's great." "I heard about Ren. How are things going with the merger?"
"It's tough." Small talk was killing me.
I looked over my shoulder and found the woman he'd walked in with watching us. She turned her head away immediately. My pride wanted me to not mention her and escape with my head held high. But I couldn't help myself.
"New workout partner?"
"We didn't arrive together, if that's what you're thinking."
I couldn't hold back my emotions any longer. My lips started to tremble, so I bit down. The taste of metal flooded my mouth as I sucked in blood. "I need to get to work. It was nice seeing you." I walked away before he could say anything, but he never even made an attempt to stop me. To say I'd been distracted this morning was an understatement. I'd spent 3 hours answering 6 emails and staring at copy that needed approval by noon, but I still couldn't get past the first 2 sentences. I also mustn't have heard Bennett walk into my office or even begin to speak.
"Earth to Texas."
I looked up. He waved his hands in my line of vision.
"Are you in there?"
I blinked a few times and shook my head. Sorry, I was daydreaming on a campaign. Bennett squinted like he knew I was full of shit, but surprisingly, he let it go.
Come with me.
He nodded his head back toward my office door.
Where? Just come. I want to show you something.
The fight had been sucked out of me today, so I sighed and got up. I followed him over to an alcove down the hall that held a file cabinet with closed accounts. He opened it and took out a random file.
Check out Marina.
I looked down at the file. Whatever page was on the top was upside down.
Huh?
He discreetly pointed his eyes in the direction of our assistant, whose desk was in our line of sight down the hall. Following, my eyes widened.
Is that?
He turned a page in the upside-down file and grinned from ear to ear.
Yep, I think so. I did a drive-by and checked her garbage. 2 wadded-up balls of tinfoil. And our leftovers are missing. I went looking for them to have for lunch, and when she saw me pass by, she smiled like she was on the Crazy Town bus with Jack Nicholson driving to go fishing.
I laughed, something I didn't think I'd do for a while after this morning.
You know what I think?
What? I shut the folder he was pretending to look at and dropped it into the file cabinet.
I think you're both nuts.
I slammed the drawer. He followed me back to my office.
At least when I ate hers, it was a legit accident.
Right, you meant to steal from someone else.
Exactly.
I sat down behind my desk. Bennett helped himself to a visitor's chair. Apparently, he wasn't leaving.
Did you bring lunch?
No, I forgot it in the fridge at home, actually. He picked up a small picture frame on my desk and examined it. It held a picture of Mom and me on her wedding day to Mateo. Andrew had taken it. Bennett grinned and set it back down.
My girl looked beautiful.
I shook my head, wise ass.
I had a lunch meeting that canceled. Want to order in and I can show you the new logo concepts I did this morning? I'm in the mood for Greek.
God, he'd already drawn new logos. I couldn't afford to be distracted.
Sure, I'll take a gyro with the sauce on the side.
Great, he stood.
And I'll take a falafel with a side order of patatas tiganites, those fried potato things.
What are you telling me for?
He jammed his hands into his pockets. So you can order. The name of the place is Santorini Palace. It's on Main Street.
Me? Why am I ordering? You asked me to order with you. He pulled a billfold from his pocket and slipped out 2 20s.
I'll pay, but you have to order.
Is ordering beneath you or something? He walked to my door.
I went out with the woman who takes the orders a few months ago. Her family owns the place.
So?
I don't want her to spit in my food.
I shook my head. You're unbelievable. The yellow and black look really good. We'd just finished lunch, and Bennett now showed me 4 different versions of the logo he'd developed this morning, based on the sketches we came up with last night. He really was a talented artist. I pointed to the last one. I like this one the best. The font is crisper.
Sold. We'll move forward with that for our meeting with Jonas on Friday. Did you make any progress on the tagline and ad ideas?
I sort of had a bad morning.
Get your head stuck in some other handsome guy's windshield wiper?
I smiled half-heartedly. I wish. I had a rough start to the day. As if on cue, my phone began to buzz. Andrew flashed on the screen. I stared at it. After the second ring, Bennett looked at me.
Aren't you going to answer that? Andy's calling.
No. I thought I'd hidden my sadness, but after the phone stopped ringing, Bennett said,
You want to talk about it?
My eyes jumped to his. His concern seemed genuine. No, but thank you. He nodded and gave me a minute by cleaning up our empty food containers. When he sat back down, he turned over the paper he'd brought in with the logos and started to draw something.
I have an idea for an ad.
I stared down at the paper the entire time he sketched, lost in thought.
What do you think?
I sighed. I ran into Andrew at the gym this morning with another woman. Bennett wrinkled up the paper he'd just sketched on and wadded it into a ball. He leaned back in his chair, stretched his long legs out in front of him, and folded his arms across his chest.
You just happened to run into him? I thought about saying yes, but decided to admit I was a loser. I hung my head and shook it.
Who was the woman?
I don't know. He didn't say.
What did he say?
Not much. He was definitely surprised to see me. I hadn't gone to the gym in a while, since it became awkward seeing him there.
And you're sure they're a couple?
I shrugged. He said they hadn't come together. I think he saw in my face what it looked like to me. The same way the two of us used to walk into the gym together after spending the night at my place.
You said yourself that you could both see other people.
Saying it and seeing it are two different things. My phone began to buzz again. Both of us stared at Andrew's name flashing on the phone. Before I could stop him, Bennett grabbed my phone and swiped to answer.
Hello?
My eyes bulged from my head as I glared a death warning at him.
She's...
He paused for a few heartbeats. At least I think that's how long it was. My heart had stopped beating.
Busy right now.
He listened and then shook his head.
This is Bennett, a good friend of Annalise's. And who is this?
Quiet.
Arthur, got it. I'll let her know you called.
Pause.
Oh, Andrew. All right, Andy. You take care now.
Bennett swiped to end the call and tossed the phone back onto the table. What the hell did you just do?
Gave the undeserving prick something to think about.
You have a lot of nerve picking up my phone and answering it. He bent his head so we were eye level and stared.
Someone has to have balls with that jerk.
Then he got up and walked out of my office.
Chapter 11. Women are way too fucking sensitive. I reread an email from Human Resources for the third time. Bennett, as you are aware, the recent merger has left many employees feeling anxious about the long-term status of their positions here at Foster, Burnett, and Wren. Because of that, statements from management may be scrutinized by employees in a manner that they had not been before. As such, we ask that you, as well as all senior managers, please be cognizant of the sensitivity of your responses to employees. Please refrain from criticisms, such as telling an employee that they make too big of a deal out of things, and to suck it up. Although no formal complaint has been filed, these types of comments can be considered harassment and lend to a difficult work environment. Thank you. Mary Harmon. I knew exactly who had complained. Finley Harper. Doesn't the name just scream, I have a stick up my ass? This was all Annalise's fault. Finley was a transplant from Wren, of course. None of my crew had ever gone to HR. Hell, just last week I'd told Jim Falcon I didn't care if he had to blow the client. I was firing his ass if the CEO of Monroe Paint didn't come out of the conference room smiling like the fucking idiot he was after our meeting was over. I shook my head. Annalise and her goddamn color coding and team spirit. She probably cries along with the people she has to fire. And come to think of it, where the hell has she been? I hadn't seen her since yesterday at lunch when I answered the call from her sorry-ass excuse of an ex. Maybe I should start to say and do the opposite of everything I thought from now on around these people from Wren. Next time Finley spends a half hour complaining that a client doesn't like designs done to their exact specifications, instead of telling her to suck it up and get back to work, I'll sit down and ask her how it makes her feel to have a client unhappy with her work. Maybe over some tea. And Annalise, when she asked me what I think about her so-called break, instead of being honest and telling her that her dick of an ex wants his dick sucked by someone other than her, I'll explain that it's normal for men to want a period of separation every so often, and that I'd bet dollars to donuts he comes back a happier and more well-adjusted man because of her understanding. Wake the fuck up, people. I hit reply and started to type a response to Mary in HR, then thought better of it. Instead, I went looking for Miss Sunshine, who had never delivered the copy for our meeting with Jonas tomorrow. Annalise's door was open, but her head was buried in her computer screen. I knocked twice to get her attention and then walked in. Before I say anything, are you recording this conversation to bring to Human Resources? If so, let me go back to my office and change into my pink pussy pants. She looked up, and it felt like I'd been hit with a sledgehammer to the chest. Crying. Annalise was crying. At least, she had been recently. Unconsciously, I rubbed at a dull ache on the left side of my rib cage. Her face was red and puffy, and a streak of mascara ran down her cheek. I took a few steps back toward the door, and for a split second, I debated not stopping. I mean, what could she be crying over? Chances are it was either work or her ex. I was the least competent person to give relationship advice to anyone. And work? This woman was my adversary, for God's sake. Helping her was helping myself right out of a fucking job. Yet instead of walking back over the threshold, I found myself pulling the door closed, with me still inside. You okay? My voice was hesitant. Women were always unpredictable, but a crying woman needed to be treated like a wounded puma lying in the plain you're trying to cross. She could continue to lie in pain, licking wounds inflicted by someone else in silence, or she could decide at any moment to tear into an innocent bystander and feast on him for lunch. Basically, I was scared shitless of a woman in tears. Annalise sat up straighter in her seat and started to shuffle papers around her desk. Fine. I'm just finishing up the copy for the Venus meeting with Jonas tomorrow. Sorry I didn't get it to you sooner. I've just been busy. She opened the door, giving me the chance to bail on discussing anything personal, and again, I failed to back up. What the fuck was wrong with me? She was waving the advance to go, collect $200 card in my face, yet I reached out and plucked the go directly to jail card from the pile instead. I took a seat in a guest chair in front of me. You want to talk about it? What the fuck? Did that just come out of my mouth? Again? I knew I shouldn't have watched The Notebook a few weeks ago, but I'd been too hungover to get up and find the remote to change the channel. Annalise looked up once more. This time our eyes met. I watched as she tried to pretend nothing was wrong, and then her bottom lip began to tremble. I spoke to Andrew a little while ago. The douchebag. Great. Figures he'd heard her over the phone while she's at work. Any guy who utters the words, "We should take a break," has no balls to begin with. I had no idea what to say, so I went with as little as possible. Less likely I'd stick my foot in my mouth. Sorry. She sniffled. I tried not to call him. I really did. He sent me a few texts after you answered my phone yesterday saying we needed to talk, but it was making me crazy to see his texts and not respond. She laughed through her tears. More crazy than having my icons in all the wrong folders has made me over the last week. I grinned. You're welcome. I probably just added 3 years back to your life by helping you overcome the demons of organizational control. Annalise opened her drawer and fished out a tissue. Wiping her eyes, she said, How many years do I get added back if I fix them after 4 days? I nodded. We'll work on it. Next week, you'll give me your full page to-do list, and we'll try to make it 5 days without you checking shit off. How do you know I have a full page to-do list? I gave her a look that said, Are you joking, Captain Obvious? She sighed. I bet Andrew knew I'd call him back, too. I had no doubt about that, either. The guy was a douchebag because he knew what he could get away with and kept her dangling at the end of that point. I might be the last person who should give relationship advice, but I do know men. And any guy who ends things over the phone is a jerk-off and not worth your tears. Oh, Andrew didn't end things. He didn't? Then why are you crying? Because he asked me to meet him tomorrow after work for dinner. I furrowed my brows. I'm lost. Why is that a bad thing? Because Andrew is a good man. He wouldn't tell me it was fully over on the phone. Her eyes started to fill with water again. He asked me to meet him after work at the Royal Excelsior. I'm sure it's because he's going to buy me an expensive dinner before he ends things in person. The Royal Excelsior? Isn't that the place in the Royal Hotel downtown? I have a client a few blocks away. She nodded and wiped her nose. Okay. So I'm a big enough man to admit when I'm wrong, and obviously I was wrong thinking her ex was asshole enough to end shit on the phone. I hadn't realized the guy was a giant asshole and was going to fuck her first before ending it. You shouldn't go meet him. Annalise offered a sad smile.
Thank you, but I need to.
I struggled with my thoughts. Did I lay it out for her?